Now broadcasting the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show, positioning your business with strategies for an extraordinary future. Dr. Nilda features expert guests from diverse backgrounds to bring you their stories and strategies that have helped them reach their success. The diversity in industries gives you that panoramic view from an array of industries. They are innovators, thought leaders, trendsetters, and strategists. Here, Dr. Nilda reveals strategies that will position you to be on the cutting edge and be able to do what you love with the people you like, making the profits you want to live the lifestyle that you have dreamed of. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nilda Perez.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show. Today, I have with me again my co-host, Rachel Calderon. Say hello, Rachel.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay, and I have a very, very interesting guest. His name is Richard Gottlieb, and he is a CEO of Global Toy Experts. He is a global consultant. He is internationally known consultant. He's a writer, he's a speaker, and he's a commentator on the business of play. He is highly valued for his ability to visualize how to survive and thrive in the 21st century play economy. He is the publisher of Global Toy News, which is a very interesting publication, the industry resource for toys news and toy trends and analysis for the business of play. Richard holds an MBA in global business management from Phoenix University and a bachelor's in English literature from the University of Richmond. Welcome, Richard. How are you?
Good. Nice to be talking to you today.
It is such an honor. So I want to start with what attracted you to the business of play?
I think all of us have some kid in us. And so I think that just the whole topic of play and toys is a kind of a fun and attractive product segment. And then I was just really interested in the fact of it seems toys are just so relevant to our lives. You know, they help shape who we become as adults. And in that, for that reason, they help shape the future. So it's an interesting and most of the time, enjoyable business to be in. Not all the time, but most of the
time. Yeah. I mean, every business has its drawbacks, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, the business of play, I think, is such a phenomenal idea, such a phenomenal thought. So what do you look for when you're choosing a toy for your business? Are you looking for educational toys, entertainment, creativity? What exactly do you look for today in toys?
We're pretty agnostic when it comes to choosing who we work with. You know, it doesn't have to be a particular class category or classification of toy. What we look for are products that seem to provide a lot of play value and to have some uniqueness. It's very challenging to try to bring a Me Too product to market. So we look for the unique and the new and the fun.
Okay. All right, so if you can explain a little bit more. So when you are looking for toys for your company, I know that you go through an array of different companies. How do you know what's cutting edge? Because I know toys today, that's one of my pet peeves. These toys today are not the same toys that we played with as kids. So toys are so progressive. They've really come such a long way. So mm-hmm. What exactly are you looking for when shaping a child's future, when shaping an adult's future, you know, shaping that child into an adult, what exactly are you looking for to bring to the forefront for them to get from a toy?
Well, it has to be relevant to their lives and to the future we're going to live in. So first of all, let's not forget that just those regular blocks and physical toys that we play with are still extremely relevant. And I know a lot of parents see their kids as having a lot of screen time, but they also like to play with just traditional physical toys. And very frankly, that's where we learn the physics of our world. You watch a child build a tower of bricks, of blocks.
Right.
it'll fall down and then they'll build it back up again and it falls down and they'll keep building it until it stays up. And they're playing, but they're also learning the physics of what's of gravity and the laws of gravity and balance and what stays up and what falls down.
Right.
In their world, screens are very, very important. And in the world they're going to live in and they're going to work in, this is how people communicate. So parents who want to take screens away, I think, are making a mistake because you're not preparing them for the world as it is. It's you're kind of trying to bring back your childhood, which is, frankly, it's just not relevant to their childhood. So in that
or their future, for that matter,
correct.
Is that accurate? Right. Not only their childhood now, but their future.
Right.
Okay.
And then finally, we try to remember that. You know, it's a tough world. It's a hard world. So there's a lot of fun out there, particularly with soft toys. So one of the reasons that Fidgetals, which was this cute little worm-like plush robot, with a plush robot worm that goes around your finger, was so popular this year, I think, is because of a desire for not just high tech, but high touch. You know, to be able to touch and feel and have some softness, because kids really want that.
Right. Okay. Now let me. We all know that we saw that little thing that was. I forgot. You touched it and it turned out. I don't even know what it was called because I just found it kind of like an interesting and strange.
It was a spin. Yeah.
It's like it spins. It had like three little.
Oh, fidget spinner.
Yes. I think it was something like that. So for something like that to be produced, how far? You know, because I'm in. How far in advance, you know, do you choose your toys? I know fashion is usually like 5 and 10 seasons away, but toys, how does that work? Because I was really surprised when I saw that little interesting toy. I was like, and everyone had it. Even
right.
if it was for a short season, everyone had it.
Right, and it was all the rage.
That was a bit of an outlier. So let me answer your question, and then let me just talk about that product for a minute. Typically, we start showing new products about 10 months to a year in advance. So when we take a look at products by inventors, this is going to probably be at least 18 months between someone getting the approval for an invention, a toy invention. And before it finally hits the shelves. So there is a process involved. And part of that is you have a lot of design work and approvals that have to be done. And then of course, you've got to make them. And we make most of our toys, roughly 86% in China on the other side of the world. So it takes a time to just physically get the product made and to market. So it takes time. The fidget spinner that you were talking about was an interesting story in which that product had been around for years. Yes, and it had been a toy designed really for kids who struggled with autism. Suddenly it went mainstream. And sadly, the woman who invented it originally let her patent go like a couple months before it took off. So she's never gotten any advantage from that. And so anybody could make it.
Wow.
So the question becomes, why did it suddenly become so popular? And like with any big fad, we really don't know. I mean, any fad that starts with the public is a phenomenon that if we understood it, we would have fads all the time. There's just something about a product at a certain place in a certain time that catches hold. In the case of the spinner, I would imagine that some cool kid influencer on some playground somewhere brought it to school, and it just traveled from through what I call the schoolyard social network. It worked from schoolyard
right.
City to city, and eventually around the world.
That's interesting. So how hard is it? So how difficult is it to market some of these toy ideas,
or to bring it
to the market?
A
new toy to market. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, because that toy was around for so many years.
Right. Well, typically, first of all, you've got to get in front of a toy company. just for them to even look at it.
Right.
And
such as like a Toys R Us?
No, like a Mattel or a Hasbro.
Okay, got it.
MGA or a Spin Master, and they have people whose job it is to look at outside inventions from outside inventors. If you could get an appointment, and typically you need an agent to be able to do that, you get a chance to make your pitch, and they have to decide if they think it's a viable product, and if they can make it at an affordable price. You know, you can have the coolest product in the world, but if you can't make it at a price that people will pay for it, they just won't do it. And so if you're fortunate enough to be approved, they will license the rights or buy the rights to your product and begin their own styling and design of it. And then once they've done that, they'll show it to retail buyers, Toys R Us or Walmart or your local toy store. And hopefully people want it, they make it, they ship it, and then the consumer gets to vote as to whether it's a good product or not. And they vote with their wallets.
Yeah, exactly. They vote with their credit cards.
Right.
Yeah, right. So what direction do you see? Because I know you're not just, you're just not involved in global toys, but you're also a futurist. So what direction do you see the toy industry going?
Well, I think, first of all, just from a retail standpoint, the toy industry is, our retailers are no less affected than other retailers by the rise of the internet and e-commerce. When I was a kid, and maybe when you were a kid, the most exciting thing that could happen to us was to get our driver's license, because it meant we were emancipated.
That's right.
We were free.
There's a lot of boundaries now that you think about it, but at the time we were free, right?
So now though, 16-year-olds really don't care. The number of 16-year-olds getting their driver's licenses has just plummeted over the last 5-6 years.
Really?
Because these kids don't care about driving. Their rite of passage is a cell phone, a mobile device, or a computer, and getting access to the internet. So for them, they shop online. And they have no qualms about shopping online. As a matter of fact, I just saw some statistics that, it's the younger edge of the millennial generation that's doing most of the shopping online. I think like close to a third of them do most of their shopping online. So this is having a huge impact on what we call the bricks and mortar retailer, that traditional retailer has a store, a front, and has a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And therefore they have to do enough business to support their infrastructure, their physical infrastructure. And frankly, the internet just needs to take enough. They don't have to take all your business. They just need to take away enough so that you can't support that anymore. So I think as a result, what we're gonna see is a reduction in the number of physical stores. We're going to see a continued proliferation of digital play and of digital purchasing.
That's interesting. Interesting that you say that, because I was just thinking, back in the days, toys for me, a company like Toys R Us was, I would just sometimes take the kids there and it was like an experience. They were able to touch the Legos, the latest Legos, look at them, even ride a bike, to actually choose. So for you to say that, most of the millennials are doing online purchases, that's interesting, because I feel that the experience to me would have never gone away. You know what I'm saying? And then you're saying that most of them are purchasing online.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Right. And going and taking that a few steps back, what you said earlier, that kids are desiring more high touch. So on that note, I find that if they're seeking more high touch.
You mean high touch or high tech?
high touch. They want high touch. They want the high tech, but they also want high touch.
They do. Yeah.
But yet a lot of these companies, FAO Schwarz, a company that had been there, what, 50 plus years, Toys R Us is really, they're really taking a dive and closing a lot of stores. So that's what I find interesting. Like, how will that play out in the future when they can't actually see or touch the toy until they actually get it in their hands?
Well, FAO Schwarz is actually coming back. They've announced that they were sold to another company and they're going to open a store near Rockefeller Center, right next to the skating rink.
So
the store will not be as big, but they are coming back. Toys R Us sadly today announced they're closing 182 stores. And that is an example of a retailer who, again, is just really struggling with a lot of competition, but mostly a lot of debt, which has prevented them from really modernizing their stores and in their parking lots, frankly. So hopefully they'll get it back together, because they're for good or ill, they're the toy industry's showroom.
Okay.
So, go.
I want to come back. I want to bring it closer to you. What kind of services does Global Toy Experts provide?
Well, you know, we work with as agents for people who invent toys. So if you're a toy inventor out there and you'd like to contact us, you can contact me at richard@globaltoyexperts.com. We'll take a look at what you have and see if we can help you. We also work with toy companies that want to increase their business, both in the United States and globally. We work with startups. We do some expert witness work. We do mergers and acquisitions. So we stay very busy.
Fantastic. All right. So is there a change? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
But is there like a change between like the United States and then as far as toys global. Are concerned and global, you know, since you're a global toy expert, is there like a massive change in the way the I guess we, our children and others
play?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a difference in consumption pattern. And, you know, in the United States, we buy a lot of plastic and we throw it away pretty quickly. Because we are very, very focused on the lowest price. In Europe, and particularly in Central Europe, France and Germany, they're really into toys as an investment. And so they really are looking for, they're more interested in wood and with more durable materials. They want products that they can pass down from sibling to sibling and generation to generation. So I like to say that whereas for Europe, toys are a legacy purchase, and for us, it's a landfill purchase.
Wow.
Okay, great. There's a big difference.
Yeah, huge difference.
Yeah.
Just
to continue with your point, I just want to mention that China is predicted to be the biggest toy market in the world by 2022. And their pattern is they really don't give toys as a reward. They really like educational products. They see toys as a tool for learning. So there are differences between the countries. But if you've got a great brand, it's Star Wars or, you know, Iron Man, it crosses borders.
Okay. Yeah. But that's for those like specialty toys.
Right. But specialty toys, right. The Europeans really, I think, have a healthier outlook on what a toy represents.
So does Europe buy less toys because they're inherited from family member to generation to... Do they buy more or do they buy less than they do in the United States?
Well, we actually spend more dollars. We buy a lot of toys.
Okay. A lot of toys. And then they all go to the landfill.
Right. Yeah, well, you walk in somebody's house, you're going to see a lot of plastic.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking plastic. I'm just saying that it tends to be more of an impulse purchase here. where it is studied very carefully.
And Asia is more educational.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Well, that really changes the whole global perspective on toys.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So okay. I also know that you have a newsletter, a very interesting newsletter, actually. Mm-hmm. I was up late last night looking through it.
We both were.
Yeah, and it was really fascinating. So who is this for? Who purchases, who looks at this? Who's this for?
It's mostly people involved in the toy industry, in the play industry. I like to use the term play industry because that includes people who are in video games and apps.
Right.
And also, frankly, play encompasses anything from play centers that you go and you play video games, to the bowling alley. So we're really interested. We reach, people who are in the business of play. Also people who are in intellectual property, licensing companies, and also media, primarily children's media.
Okay. We have a phenomenal concept. They were the ones that were able to break through a pretty monopolized industry, which was the video industry. And that was because they found a way of making play intergenerational, which I think is fascinating. So for children, teens, adults, women,
seniors. Working out and all that, yeah.
Right, so they were able to bring that. How much of that do you see in the future?
Well, first of all, everybody wants to play, and adults want to play too. And I think that we've had a real shift in that over the last few generations where it was really seen as unseemly almost for an adult to play, maybe 30, 40 years ago. And now it's very much a part of life for adults. I think where the toy industry makes a mistake and toy retailers make a mistake is we present toys as a product for children. And if you look at how we merchandise and advertise, but really we should be selling play as a family experience.
Absolutely.
And one of the wonderful things about, I think, board games as an example that are designed for families
is that the
child gets to sit down with their parents and everybody's got to play by the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's democratizing. And I think it's very liberating for children.
Right. And it's collaboration. Mm-hmm. It teaches them teamwork within a family structure, which, again, when you work, it really becomes a family structure. So there's teamwork in the yard, kids that are playing, sports. But for those kids that don't play sports, where do they get that experience?
Well, I can just make a little point here that one of the things that we don't have as much anymore, and I think is dearly missed, is free play. Without adults around. I did a back of the envelope little analysis the other day, and I found that the average child works a 60-hour week, and that's between going to school and homework and doing anything that's an adult supervised experience, like playing soccer or piano lessons or whatever.
Right.
So these kids do not have that experience of being able to go outside and play with their friends,
right,
and have to settle their own disputes. And let me explain to you why I just want to just go into this. To me, one of the keys to a democratic nation is for children to learn on their own how to make laws and how to enforce them. So what seemed so innocent when we were kids was going outside and choosing up teams and playing baseball. But if you think about it, you're making the law, what's in bounds and what's out of bounds. And then you're policing it. You were out of bounds, and then you're judging it. No, you weren't. So I really would like to see us just give kids a break a little bit and leave them alone and let them settle some of their own disputes and have fun by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Love that point.
I agree. And I'm just going to take it back a little bit to before. The experience, I think, that adults are, that you were saying that adults don't really experience, you know, play time anymore. You're so right. I just recently came back from Disney with my kids. And I must say that the experience, my kids would look at me like, Mom, I cannot believe you're behaving the way you are. They're like, you're like this businesswoman has turned into like, you know, the Hulk of play, you know? Yeah. They're like, you're screaming, you're yelling on these roller coasters. And we went on the Pandora ride, which was a 3-hour wait. And I must say, I must've been like the only adult who came out of there. Oh my gosh, that was so worth it. Oh my gosh, because I had so much fun. So I think even we adults really need to have that moment and see where we can have that playtime ourselves, because it brings laughter. It just releases all these stress toxins that we develop on our own, you know? So I had to.
Great point. I love that. That's so true, Rachel.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have to charge Richard with finding those games, those toys that are going to help adults to be able to de-stress. Find those people, because we need it. Adults, we need it.
We sure do. And I think
important.
Adults find that in board games, which are a little more static, but you know, it's also fun to run around in the yard, and there's plenty of products out there that remind us to do that. But mostly I think just getting down on the floor with your child or your spouse and engaging in something that makes you both laugh, and maybe even it's a little bit competitive too. That's all right. It's fun to do.
Absolutely. Yes, in my households, we get very competitive when it comes to these board games, especially Monopoly.
Yeah. I do have something I want to say to your grandparents out there. You know, a lot of people come to me and ask me what should they buy? What should grandparents, you know, how do they decide what to buy a child and their grandchild? And what I like to say is, get them what you love. Don't give them what they love. Their parents, that's their parents' job. You give them your enthusiasm. So shoot, if you love stamp collecting or coin collecting, get them started doing that. Worst that'll happen is they won't particularly find it interesting, but they'll know that that was your passion and they'll remember it. And the best that'll happen is you'll create an enthusiasm with them that you can share. So don't be so concerned about buying them the hottest toy. Get the product that you really enjoy.
Right. Yes, I agree.
My cousin's children, what their grandmother has given them is that she bakes with them. She loves to bake, and she's teaching them how to bake, but she's teaching them measurements. She's teaching them color. She's teaching them so much with what she loves to do. And the kids love it. Absolutely love it. So you're right. Grandparents should be teaching them or giving them what they love and what they enjoy, because right. You'll see over time that they really do enjoy it. Even if it takes them some time to get into it, you know, because sometimes that, you know, initially they're like, what on earth is this? But over time they'll start getting an appreciation, even if it's when they're older. So wait a minute, my grandparents, you know, my grandmother, my grandfather gave me this. I should look into this, you know, and see how it applies to their life as they grow.
Sure.
I agree. Great point.
So Richard, let me ask you this. Where do you see the future of toys and play?
I think what you're going to be seeing is a continuation of screenplay. Kids are now playing with 5 screens. You know, you got your TV and your computer and your iPhone and then other forms of screens. And then we have, so I think you're going to see more virtual play. And we all have to remember that for those of us who are older, there's a very bright line between what's virtual and what's real. But for kids, there's not. I always like to say kids live in a bigger room than we do. You'll go to like McDonald's and you see some kid in there and he's with his family, but he's looking into his mobile device, and you think like, what's wrong with that kid? Why isn't he with his family? Why is he in his screen? And the reality is he thinks his family's in there with him because he's in a bigger room than they do. So expect that to continue. Do not expect the death of traditional toys. Don't worry, they're still going to be around for a long time to come. We love to touch things. And remember, at least for now, you can't taste something on a computer and you can't smell it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a long future for that. So I'm pretty optimistic on play. I just think we're going to play in surprising new ways. And I just hope someday I'm not going to see some kid hooked up with something plugged into his head. But don't bet against it.
Right. Well, right. Mm-hmm. But I love the my takeaway from all of this is that although the future of play is going to be highly tech, bringing families together through play is really important. And I love that. I love that concept. That's excellent.
And by the way, what's very virtuous is about this is that with digital play, if grandma and grandpa live in Seattle and the grandchildren live in Miami, they can play together through, yes, through digital play. So mm-hmm. it does have the ability to
bring families together.
Bring families together, yes.
I think that we have to just kind of learn how to play together. So if they necessarily may not play with a physical toy, and like you say, they're more with a visual on their phone, you know, like sometimes when my mom comes and the kids are playing, they'll play with her on Instagram and they'll just make those funny faces. And they sit there sometimes laughing for hours.
Right.
Because, you know, they have the little guy with the little ears and they just sit there laughing for hours. But she's, you know, although she's 85, she's laughing with her, you know, 15-year-old.
That's wonderful.
Right.
And by the way, for any of your listeners or viewers who are concerned about screens and you know, children getting bad ideas and going where they shouldn't be going online, let me just say that in the 19th century, when the novel became extremely popular, parents became very upset that their kids were staying in the room and reading all the time, so they were antisocial. And they were getting bad ideas. And somehow we survived that. And we now consider reading a novel to be really a pretty high point of refinement. So it's just kind of another way for us to interact with each other and the world and to take in information. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. Well, Richard, I want to thank you for this information. This has been excellent. I know the audience, you know, I think everybody can relate to what you call it, to play, actually.
Oh, yes.
Right, mm-hmm. To play. And so I'm very fascinated. I'm really excited that you came on the show. I know you're a really busy man, and I'm so glad you were, you know, in town, because I know you travel globally a lot. So thank you so much for your information.
Good questions.
Yeah, and I would love to have you back in the show, possibly by the end of the year. So okay. you can tell us about the latest and greatest toys. So
especially before Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. Right before Christmas. So so thank you so much for being here. And to my audience, I say thank you so much for coming back and listening. And we will see you next week with another Futurist. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Till next week.
Thank you for listening to the Foresight Strategy Show. You can hear host Dr. Nilda, co-host Rachel with feature guests every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live or anytime on demand. Visit www.drnildaperez.com/show. For more information, sign up to our Foresight Strategies Insider Newsletter, a $10 value for free at www.drnildaperez.com/newsletter.